I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 7 of Season 6 of Movie Rep Minute, the daily podcast where we take our Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Jim O'Kane of the Rocketeer Minute, of Apollo 13 Minute, of the Airplane Minute, of the list
airport
just keeps going
minute,
on. And, sorry, Airport.
Yes.
Excuse me, the Airport Minute. Airplane is one you're going to do in the future, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the list just goes on.
Yeah, we did have Robert Hayes up for our last episode of Airport. We had Robert Hayes from Airplane.
Yes, you mentioned that on one of your Apollo 13 minutes. Actually, I think I just listened to it yesterday where you mentioned it. So I can't wait to hear that.
He was one of our best guests. Yeah. So if you get a chance to go to Airport, listen to the last episode,
it's on my list. You know, I got
awesome.
Yeah, Jim's shows are on my list. So
you've got enough things to do. I've seen the movies you're watching every day. When you sleep, I don't know.
I sleep. I find time to sleep 5 or 6 hours a night. Also, yes.
Oh wow.
You know, and I have a day job. You know, so it's,
wow.
I keep busy.
No, definitely. Wow. Well, here we are. We're back in Mr. Gower's pharmacy.
That's right. So Minute 7 begins with Mary responding to Violet and ends with Mary starting to tell a little bit of a secret. Yesterday we started things. We reached a point where George, you know, got to work in Mr. Gower's drugstore. Mr. Gower is a little upset that he's late. And there's a little girl who we found out yesterday was named Mary sitting on one of the stools, and another girl named Violet comes in. Actually, we don't know her name yet. Another girl sits on a different stool. And this minute begins with the response of Mary saying to her, "Hello, Violet." And it's funny how we can see that the actress who's playing Mary, she like looks up and away as she's like responding to this greeting. Yeah, as if she just has to acknowledge it, but that's it. You know, nothing beyond that.
Yeah, she's totally, and her face is complete resignation that she doesn't want to have anything to do with Violet.
That's right. Not at all.
They obviously have a history, and it looks like the history involves George Bailey.
It could be. And then George, you know, keeps working, and then says to Violet, 2 cents worth of shoelaces. You know, and I mean, I've always found it really funny that most people will not know what they're referring to here. I know you do, Jim. They're not referring to shoelaces that you have on, you know, that you put on your shoes.
Yeah, and it's doubly confusing because while he's saying shoelaces, it looks like he's tying shoelaces under the counter.
Right.
He's putting on his apron, but you're thinking shoelaces. Like, is he talking about she wants shoelaces?
That's right.
But no, they're definitely it is of the time. And shoelaces, of course, was a form of licorice.
That's right.
That was very, very popular at the time. It's kind of licorice as a candy has kind of diminished in popularity, but at the time it was that. Or you know, they had things like clove gum and things. People had different tastes back then,
mm-hmm.
and they liked this sharp taste of licorice.
Now, was this black? You think this was black or red licorice?
I'm pretty sure this was black licorice. I think the red licorice would be later on. I think as the flavors developed, I think that was more of a 40s 50s thing. I don't know how old red vines are, but it's been the original licorice flavored licorice has been around for hundreds of years. I mean, it's used in everything from
do you know how far back it goes?
I would guess Roman times.
No, 1614.
Ah, okay.
Licorice format that we know nowadays, which are also known as Pontefract cakes, where they would have discs of licorice that had the image of Pontefract Castle on it.
Wow.
And they started adding sugar to it in 1760, I guess to make it a little tastier.
Wow. I'm looking at how far back the Red Vines Company, which started out as the American Licorice Company, began in 1914, and out of Chicago. Red Vines, the red version of licorice, didn't come about until 1950.
That's right.
So
there's the answer as to whether this is red or black.
Yeah, and speaking in terms of movie history, one of the more famous scenes using black licorice was Charlie Chaplin in The Gold Rush, where he makes a meal out of his shoes. He's trapped in Alaska, and the shoes were made out of black licorice from the American Licorice Company of Chicago.
That's right. Right. So, I mean, red licorice, the irony is it doesn't even have licorice in it.
Yeah, it's just licorice, texture, I guess.
That's right. Licorice comes from the I think it's called anise. The extract is anise. Extract. I mean, actually, in Hebrew, licorice is actually called anise.
Anise, huh?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So it makes sense because it comes from.
Yeah.
That's where it comes from.
Yeah.
Licorice is just, whether it could be strawberry or cherry or raspberry, different types of flavors. Nowadays, they have tons of different flavors. You can get apple flavored.
My connection with anise is I always think of Stella Doro, the New York area. Pastries or breads that had anise cookies and things like that. And I never associated that with licorice, though. It didn't have the same flavoring. I mean, maybe it's the sugar or the texture of it. And of course, it's also used in liqueurs like Galliano liqueur. The primary ingredient there is anise.
Right.
So, just interesting how varied that flavor can be applied.
Correct.
Apparently it was a hot item back in the 1919 era here.
That's right. The movie is black and white, so it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
That's why I asked if it's red or black, but it makes sense because we will see later. We'll see later on that he actually gives her, the licorice that the shoelaces that she asks for. Now, 2 cents, I mean, we talked a little bit about this yesterday, about the price differences, but 2 cents in 1919, how much do you think it's worth today?
2 cents, I'm going to go with a quarter. I'll say 25 cents.
35 cents, 35.
35 cents, okay, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
35 cents is okay.
That's pretty affordable. Yeah. Yeah. I'm reading a little bit of trivia here about the red version of licorice. The company that came out, the American Licorice Company, had come out with Red Vines, and they had named it Red Vines Candy, but the public referred to it as red licorice because of the similar format and texture to the black. So that's apparently – it was just a mix-up in the fact that they used the same shaping machines to make these – it was originally called cinnamon twists and raspberry twists.
Mm-hmm.
But because they were all coming out of the same, they look all the same shape. That's how it got its name, because it looked like the black licorice coming out of the extruder.
Right. Yeah, that's very cool. Yeah. And so then George walks across. The first response that Violet gives is, "Well, she was here first." And then Mary says, "I'm still thinking." She's just biding her time.
Yeah, I mean, Violet wants to get whatever. Order Mary has, get that out of the way so she can get back to talking to George.
That's right.
And
George is ever the businessman. He keeps saying shoelaces.
Yeah. This is what you order every week.
That's right. They fail to talk about the fact that George must be very familiar with both Violet and Mary. They must always show up in the shop, and they must always have the same orders, more or less. Tomorrow we'll start talking about, some other things that don't make sense if they know each other so well. But we'll get there.
And this doesn't look like the first time the two of them sat down at the store to talk to George. They all know the drill.
That's right. And I love how Violet goes, "Please, Georgie." It's no longer George, it's Georgie.
Yeah, she's pulling out all the stops.
That's right. And as he walks over to go get what she's asking for, so then she turns to Mary and goes, "I like him." Mary says, Mary goes, "You like every boy." She says, "What's wrong with that?" How old do you think these girls are supposed to be?
They're younger than George, I would say, right? I mean, I think he's maybe.
Well, George is 12. George is 12, and yeah. Harry is 10.
I get the feeling that Mary is maybe 10, and maybe Violet's the same age as George, so she feels that she's got more of a chance with George because they might be in the same class together. And Mary's just trying harder to, you know, this boy that she really, really, really likes. But how does she compete with somebody who sees, you know, she's in school with him every day, blah, 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 that kind of thing.
Right. Okay. So, that's fair. I mean, I actually think if I'm doing my math correct, I mean, obviously Mary's brother, Marty, is in Georgia class. He's one of the you know, one of George's friends. But later on when they're at the dance and then he introduces George to Mary, he's like, "My kid sister is here." And it doesn't seem as if it's her dance. So maybe she's only a year younger than them.
Yeah, okay.
You know, that's my guess. You know, when we get to those minutes, I'll know a little better. But, you know, based on memory, I think that's what it is.
I haven't looked up what the actresses' ages were at the time.
No, I'm not talking about the actresses. I'm talking more about
the character.
Yeah. The characters, right. You know, they have this little conversation about you like every boy. What's wrong with that? So it already shows us who these two characters are. You know, we know that Violet is a young girl who will be after all the boys and will also have all the boys after her, you know, for that same reason. And Mary is a little shyer and, you know, wants to, you know, she just wants one. She doesn't need more than that.
Yeah. And it might as well be George.
That's right. It's, I don't know if it might as well be George. She wants it to be George.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, we never really find out what Mary loves about George.
Yeah.
At this stage, later on, she might learn who he is.
Well, you know, assuming, you know, George is already making this change in her life of who she is and what she is or what her goals are in life. She wants somebody like George to be in her life, obviously, because she's competing with Violet.
Right.
Now, would they be competitors if it were another boy? Or, you know, if somebody else was working Mr. Gower's.
I don't know.
So it's peculiar. You know, I don't want to jump the gun on this, but it's like, how much did this competition with Violet make her a different person
than right.
who she was if she didn't have to compete with her and every guy in town?
That's true.
Yeah, it's intriguing.
Right. And then we see George come back into the shot and he gives her a huge bag of licorice.
Yeah.
Just for 2 cents. You know, you can't even get, there's no way you can get that for 35 cents today.
Yeah. And it's pre-bagged and everything. Yeah. It's all ready to roll.
That's right. Now I found an interesting tidbit about licorice that actually in January of 2019, there was a 54-year-old man in Massachusetts who ended up dying because he would eat a bag and a half of black licorice every day for weeks. And it caused him to have low potassium levels and basically his heart stopped from it.
Wow. So Annie removes potassium from your bloodstream. I did not know that. Wow.
Yes.
So if he had bananas with his licorice, he might have been still with us.
That's right. So he actually developed a condition called pseudo hyperaldosteronism because
wow.
Yeah.
Oof. Okay. Well, stay with, don't overdo. Yeah. Just keep with 2 cents. You don't want to have any more that's of right. that a day.
Well, I don't know. The 2 cents is also a lot if you're eating that amount every day.
They should have non-prescription strength licorice then. I
think. Yeah. Well, you know, they're in the drugstore. So, you know, you talked yesterday about that you can get chloroform. So it's possible. Did you notice that there's a sign in the back that says open on Sundays?
Yes.
Okay.
And,
so,
and it has changed hours, too. They changed the hours. There's like a piece of paper taped over the front of it.
Correct.
So,
so it got me thinking. It got me thinking of the idea of Blue Laws.
Yes. Very, very memorable. Okay. So, pretty much not as much nowadays.
Well, except for, we'll
liquor laws, I would say.
We'll get there in a second.
Sure.
So just for anyone who's unfamiliar, Blue Laws, they're also known as Sunday laws. They're laws that restrict or ban some or all activities on specific days, most often on Sundays in the Western world, particularly to promote the observance of the day of rest. Such laws may restrict shopping or ban certain sale of certain items on specific days. Blue laws are enforced in parts of the U.S. and Canada, as well as some European countries, particularly in Austria, Germany, Switzerland, and Norway, where most stores have to be closed on Sundays. The U.S. Supreme Court held that blue laws are constitutional numerous times, and they would cite secular bases such as securing a day of rest for mail carriers, as well as protecting workers and families, in turn contributing to societal stability and guaranteeing the free exercise of religion. The origin of the blue laws also particularly stems from religion, particularly the prohibition of Sabbath desecration in Christian churches following first a Sabbatarian tradition. Labor unions and trade associations have historically supported the legislation of blue laws. Most blue laws have been repealed in the U.S., although many states ban selling cars and impose tighter restrictions on the sale of alcohol on Sundays. Okay, now this is obviously somewhat related to me. There is actually, there's a lot of criticism from people who celebrate Saturday as the Sabbath from that perspective, like myself, being an observant Jew. So the right to observe the Bible's Sabbath as practiced by Jews and Seventh-day Adventists gained momentum in the early 50s, and a whole bunch of civil leaders and rabbinical leaders would work either by themselves or via groups. One of them is the Joint Committee for a Fair Sabbath Law, and they understood that the rights were to be granted, provided that they did not disturb those persons who observe Sunday as a day of rest. So this stance was supported by the New York Federation of Churches and the Protestant Council of New York. The goal was to give religious freedom to merchants who want to close their places of business on Saturday, but are afraid of business losses from a five-day-a-week schedule. The state legislator discussed the idea of allowing a government-issued certificate to be placed in the window of a place of business closed on Saturdays that would be verified by a patrolman on the beat. So, you know, I've told this story before. I told it, I think, during Die Hard. My grandfather, back in the late 1930s and 1940s, so, you know, he was an observant Jew, so he couldn't work on Saturday, and you had to work on Saturdays back then. So he actually had a job in a furniture factory. And he made a deal with the owners that he would come in early and stay late on the other days of the week to make up those hours so that he wouldn't have to work also on Saturdays. And unfortunately, one morning he came in and stepped into the elevator, and the elevator wasn't there. And, you know, and he fell down one flight of stairs, hit his head and ended up dying a few days later from the thing. You know, but the idea was it was something that was so important to him, you know, that he ended up basically giving his life for that fact. He was 41 at the time when that happened.
Wow.
And this was in 1944 when this happened. So, yeah, I wanted to just mention some of the blue laws in some states that are somewhat related to either the movie or both you and I, Jim. New York has had a ban on Sunday sales since 1656. Can you believe it goes back that far? The Dutch colony of New Netherlands, they basically started having this law, and it took 320 years for it to be voided as unconstitutional in 1976. And they basically were able to void it because parts of the statute are rarely enforced by the police and routinely disregarded by thousands of businesses. So they said, okay, it's basically constitutionally defective because you had discount stores and supermarkets that were still staying open on Sundays, and they were actually making more money than all the places that had to close down because they were following the law.
Well, I think we've talked about this before. I grew up in New Jersey,
New Jersey is the next one I wanted to talk about.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you and I were both born in New Jersey, so yeah. I brought that up. So, yes. So, in how far back do you think the laws go in New Jersey?
I would think, well, they started in 1664, so probably sometime around then, even possibly
1677.
1677.
They
okay.
banned the singing of vain songs or tunes on the Sabbath. Okay, and wow. there are laws that you cannot sell electronics, clothing, or furniture in Bergen County in New Jersey on Sundays. And there are many other counties that no longer follow through with that. But there are the problem with Bergen County is that it has one of the largest concentrations of retail shopping malls of any county in the nation. And they have five major malls within there also. Paramus, you have three of the country's five major malls. You know, so basically, you know, they decided that if you were to ban any type of work on Sundays, you know, no one would be able to make any money there. So you'd have so they changed it that you can have grocery stores, gas stations, pharmacies, hotels, restaurants, and other entertainment venues that are allowed to still be open.
Well, I remember in Bergen County, there's a famous discount house from the 50s and 60s. Two guys, department stores, and on Sundays they had they had all the different. There were all different departments and big department store, but they also had a grocery store at the end at one side of it. And the clothing department, they would put up basically velvet ropes across the sections where the things you couldn't buy on Sunday, and you could walk down a corridor, you could look in, but you couldn't buy any of the stuff to get to the grocery department, or you could get to automotive, I believe, but not like if you needed parts or something, but you couldn't go buy records, or you could buy electronics. So that was all roped off, and they actually just I think they arranged the store so they could just put a box around it with velvet ropes.
There are states I was looking around, like different states, all the different laws. You know, there are places where you still can't buy a car on Sundays.
Yeah.
You know, it's illegal to sell cars.
Texas is one of them.
There are places where you can't go hunting on Sundays. Texas is one I looked up also. So you have car dealerships have to be closed on either Saturday or Sunday. They're able to, you know, the dealer is allowed to choose which of those days he's going to stay open and which one he's going to close. Obviously you have a lot of liquor laws related to that.
Yeah.
Did you know that Pennsylvania up until 1931, it was illegal to have organized sports competitions on Sundays.
Wow.
And the Philadelphia A's actually challenged it, and they were able to get a permit to start playing on Sundays. And then when they started with the NFL, they started having to try and change these laws also. I mean, that just threw me that you couldn't play organized sport.
Yeah.
Amazing. Wow. In Illinois, horse racing is prohibited on Sundays. You know, but but what it says here is really funny. It says horse racing is prohibited on Sundays unless authorized by the local municipality.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds like one campaign contribution, and it's all fixed. Yeah.
That's right.
As you know, I grew up in New Jersey, in Elizabeth, New Jersey, and we had where I grew up, there was a large concentration of Catholics and Jews in the same neighborhoods, and I can remember back from being a kid that Jewish merchants would be closed on Saturday and open on Sunday, and there were two dry cleaning stores, and my dad would have to get his clothes cleaned for Monday. He could pick them up on Monday morning, and he could go to one dry cleaning store that was run by a Catholic on Saturday, and if he didn't go there, he went next door to the Jewish dry cleaning store, and they'd have it ready for him the next morning. So it was – and I can remember we would come back from church and he'd drop off his dry cleaning, and then we'd go home. But it was – yeah. And the strangest thing about it was nobody thought anything of it. You know, this was like – okay, this is how, you know, and it worked for everybody. So it was, you know, okay, this all makes sense. But, you know, nowadays everything, the laws keep changing and everything keeps being open. The only thing around that I can think of in here in Texas, besides car dealerships that are closed, is we have the fast food restaurant Chick-fil-A, and they are closed every Sunday. But that's not by a law. That's just by the people that run in Chick-fil-A. They said everybody gets a day off on Sunday. They'd close it down. But intriguing stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
But apparently you can go to Gower's on Sunday.
That's right. whether he's drunk or whether he's sober,
it depends. Yeah,
doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, he probably moved it to, you know, let's make it 11:30 instead of 9:30. I don't think I'll be around. So apparently just move the morning opening date.
That's right. Right. So George gives Violet the licorice. She pays him, and then she says, "Help me down," and he goes, "Help you down." You know, he's not very sympathetic. I mean, he definitely isn't picking up on Violet's clues.
And he was, I think Jimmy Stewart got him to say that in the Jimmy Stewart's. If you could hear Jimmy Stewart's voice in all of that,
mm-hmm.
Help you down.
That's right.
Yeah, really came across very well.
That's right. And then Violet jumps down from the stool, and then Mary sticks out her tongue at her.
Yeah, and I love that camera pushing in at her, so you make sure you don't miss it. It's only like two frames of her tongue going out, but she's letting her inner Mary come out.
That's right. and we actually then hear the bells of the cash register, which I think is basically foreshadowing something later in the movie, possibly.
Yeah, yeah.
Who knows?
Little did any of them know what that was doing. That's right. But you know, Thankful to the National Cash Register Company to include a bell on their register.
That's right. and then we see that George is still pretty impatient, because then he turns to Mary and goes, "Made up your mind yet?" And you know, as he's doing it, we see that he takes a glass, and it doesn't look like he's washing the glass, but he's putting some liquid in the glass.
Yeah, he's pulling it off that fountain that is the fountain itself that's on the mm-hmm. that's on the front of that countertop. So he's obviously adding some kind of seltzer to what is he making though?
I don't know.
Looks like he was trying to make I thought he was going to make an ice cream soda, but then all of a sudden you're seeing like chocolate going into a
right.
And maybe then, he was using it just to rinse it out. I don't know.
Maybe because then as soon as Mary says she wants chocolate. He, if you look, he immediately has the scoop of chocolate in the glass bowl. You know, it's really quick. It's not something that doesn't take him long at all to get that. And then, you know, as he's preparing it, he goes, "With coconuts?" And she goes, "I don't like coconuts." "You don't like coconuts?" And he goes, "Stay brainless. Don't you know where coconuts come from?"
He really has a way with women.
That's right. Look at here. And he pulls out the magazine that's been in his back pocket, and he goes, "From Tahiti, the Fiji Islands, the Coral Sea." And then she says, "A new magazine? I never saw it before." He goes, "Of course you never did. Only us explorers get it. I've been nominated for membership in the National Geographic Society." So, you know, George is not very nice to her at this point.
No, not at all. And she's trying to be as nice as she can, being, you know, showing, you know, the classic dating thing of show a shared interest. And it's like, "Oh, what is that you've got there?"
That's right. Shouldn't he already know, if he's been serving Mary every week or whatever it is, shouldn't he already know that she doesn't like coconuts? Like,
yeah,
he doesn't care.
He it might've been something that he found out today. You know, I'm looking, and I've never noticed this before, that he had given her a glass of water before he was serving up the ice cream. So maybe that thing coming out of the fountain was just a glass of water, because there's a glass of water in front of her as they do the reverse shot.
Yeah, but we never see him give it to her. You know,
yeah, maybe it just lands, and it's all, yeah, it's a continuity situation. But he is proud of his honorary membership in the National Geographic Society.
That's right.
But it is odd that she hasn't seen a National Geographic until 1919, because it had been around since 1888, and it was very popular even at the turn of the century. Many, many people had it. Of course, you know, she's only a 10-year-old girl, so maybe she didn't have exposure to them. Maybe they didn't get the National Geographic at her house.
No. I mean, we never meet her father, so you don't know. You know, maybe he didn't have a father at home, and Marty didn't like reading it, so you know, they didn't have it.
Yeah, and that maybe that's, you know, the whole reason she wasn't into coconuts is that she just never had anybody to explain to her why she should like coconuts.
That's right, because they're from Tahiti and the Coral Sea and from Fiji. You know, there's no other reason why you should like coconuts.
Yeah. location. I did not look up, I don't know if you have, of the like primary markets of coconuts. I don't know if they are still Tahiti.
Right. Well, we talked about coconuts in, I think it was when Harry Met Sally. Is that possible? Yeah, I think it was when Harry Met Sally we talked about coconuts. And
is there a center of global coconut marketing or distribution?
We did talk about it, and I can't remember right now where it is. We talked mostly about deaths by coconut. So I don't remember. I mean, obviously it's somewhere. Yeah, maybe it was in the. It's probably in the Far East somewhere.
Okay.
Remember right now when. Wow, when did I, like, I'm trying to think of where coconut came up in When Harry Met Sally.
No, he's like the worst soda jerk ever in trying to sell things.
He literally is a soda jerk.
Yeah, yeah. Now I have a question. Do you have any favorite soda jerks in film history?
Well, I you know in The Best Years of Our Lives, I think he does a nice job there too.
Yeah, I do like his bringing out his bombardier skills of plotting the trajectory of how to land a banana split in front of the customer.
That's right.
He's my favorite.
Yes, Fred Derry is great. Yes.
Yeah.
Dana Andrews, Fred Derry is basically my favorite character in that movie. I mean, and there are so many to choose from.
And you know, these were both under. I mean, even Wyler was working at Liberty Films when this production was coming out. So I was thinking 1946 must have been a very busy year for soda jerk tutoring for actors. Because maybe. You had this both going on in the same year. They might be the same prop developers. So it's intriguing seeing the rise of the soda jerk in big feature films. Wow. Well, did you have anything about the National Geographic Society, for example, the relationship of like people like Alexander Graham Bell?
Yes. Or... Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 So the National Geographic Society began as a group of elite academics and wealthy patrons who were interested in travel and exploration, and the first gathering was in 1888 on January 13th. There were 33 explorers and scientists that gathered together at a private club in Lafayette Square in Washington, D.C. And they basically wanted to organize a society for the increase and diffusion of geographical knowledge. They created a constitution and a plan of organization, and they incorporated it two weeks later on January 27th, 1888. First president was Gardner Green Hubbard. His son-in-law, Alexander Graham Bell, succeeded him in 1897.
Yeah, it was mostly a family institution. The Hubbards, the Bells, and the Grosvenors all kind
Grosvenor was Bell's son-in-law also. It was the idea that you're going to give it over to your son-in-law.
Yeah. And it went for a century. Now I think it's an offshoot of both the Discovery Channel and not Ziff Davis, but Condé Nast, I believe, has a piece of the. They've kind of scattered their properties into more for-profit groups than being an exploratory society.
Yeah, they even have a music division called the National Geographic Music and Radio.
Wow, always made famous by that John Williams theme back when he was Johnny Williams.
Walt Disney became a partner. The one Disney company became a partner, surprisingly, because they basically became partners of everything.
They're now a channel within the Disney Plus organization.
Just a few months ago, the National Geographic fired most of their staff writers for the magazine because they're stopping. In 2024, they will be stopping any physical newsstand publications.
Wow. I have actually in front of me on my desk, I have the National Geographic DVDs, which has every issue since 1888.
Oh, wow.
Including a 1912 version of a 1912 photo of the Himalayas that if you extend the fold-out pages on a real paper copy of it, it extends 12 feet.
Wow.
So it's a little bit more convenient having it on a DVD.
Probably. But, well, it depends. It depends if you need to have the physical, you know,
true.
Paper. If you're going through the Himalayas,
you got really long arms.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, no, that's how you learn to map to fold maps properly.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a basic skill. But I, you know, I as a kid, my I had an aunt who gave me once I started learning to read, she gave me a subscription to the National Geographic
Society. Is that the same aunt who would you know, go fishing by throwing?
No, oh no, the different aunt. But actually, she lived next door to my other aunt.
Oh, okay.
So, but yeah, she gave me.
See, I remember your stories, Jim.
Yeah, yeah, it's me too. That's the, I keep telling them again and again. But yeah, my aunt Bertha gave me this this subscription, and she got it for me like every Christmas, and I would look forward to getting those little. It was wrapped up in brown, you know, grocery paper, and you'd slide it out and see who was on the cover. And there was usually like, you know, a gorilla or Buzz Aldrin or the Eiffel Tower. And you'd, you know, much like George Bailey, you'd open it up and it's like, I didn't know this about, you know, amphoras being found in the Aegean Sea. And, you read about like Jacques Cousteau and stuff. And it's like, this is all happening, you know, this is all happening while you're growing up. It's like there's somebody down at the bottom of the sea that's living in a submarine for a year. You know, you read these things, you could follow the space race, you could find out more about, you know, Mali, or you could find out about the history of the Smithsonian. Always fascinating articles in there that really, it gave you curiosity about things you may have never heard of before. I think that was one of the best strengths of National Geographic with kids, that you could
find out in this movie, because that's what George has all of these dreams to go all around the world and do so many different things because of what he's reading in the National Geographic. So, you know, that's really cool that they're able to, you know, to give this over, you know, just by, I mean, I think I mentioned this before, but we can see that Capra is such a visual director that there are so many things that he should, and we'll see more of it tomorrow. We'll see his genius of how he does certain things. But
Capra, I think, was affected by National Geographic. I mentioned yesterday about the movie Rendezvous in Space, his last movie. They have Danny Thomas was giving Man on the Street interviews, and he pulls up the famous character actor who's in this movie, Charles Rose. I think that's his name. He's the guy that works for Potter, who says one day this young man is going to go work for Mr. Bailey.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that I've always laughed whenever he says it because he does not look like a young man. But okay,
he's great. He said in the movie they throw it to him and he's asking him questions, and he says man was given two gifts, impatience and itchy feet, and. And he talks about that's why we explore the stars. He goes, because you've got impatience and itchy feet. So and I think that's, you know, if there's a theme through Capra's movies, it's impatience and itchy feet.
Yeah. Okay.
So I mean, kind of the Baker Bailey's personality.
That's right. Wow.
But yeah, it's just fascinating seeing all this as an oeuvre, the whole, you know, his whole motifs running through all of his films.
Yeah, for sure. Wow. And, you know, then he grabs the magazine back from her, and then he bends down to get something. And as he's bending down, she leans over the counter and, you know, starts whispering towards his, and she basically says, "Is this the ear you can't hear out of? George Bailey, I'll love you till the day I die."
What would have happened if he stood up and goes, "No, it's the other ear."
He'd say, "Wrong ear, brainless."
Yeah, she would have run out of the store screaming.
Maybe yes, maybe no. You never know. It depends how much Mary really loves him.
Yeah, and I'm wondering in the distance underneath the pipes when he's talking to Mary. Violet bought those shoelaces, but I think there's real shoelaces hanging underneath the pipes. I may be wrong on what that is, but it looks like how they used to sell spare shoelaces on a card. I may be wrong. That might be something else, but that's what it looked like to me. I was thinking, wait, this whole place is full of shoelaces.
No, under the pipes? You mean?
Under the pipes. Directly below the pipes. It's not
okay, directly below the pipes. From what I understand, and I think we get a better shot of it later this week. But I think those are cigars.
Oh, are they hanging from the card though?
Really? I believe so.
Okay, maybe.
I believe so.
Yeah,
or maybe cigarettes, cigars. I guess you can say.
Yeah, we're seeing the cigar lighter, and I know there's a sign there that we're going to talk about.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later in the week.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, right. Well, let me.
And there's also an ashtray. You can see there's an ashtray also on the counter.
Yes,
the lighter.
Yes, that's, which used to be. I mean, when we were growing up, we were everywhere.
That's right.
So,
very true. Okay, so you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into today's segment?
No.
All right.
No, I think
that's it. All right. So today's segment is off the beaten track. Uplifting story. So basically, this segment is something that my guests will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, something that's happened to them over the course of their life that is somehow uplifting to them, to someone else, could be. So Jim, you got a story for us?
Yeah, I'm going to have to preface this by saying, you know, in my previous life, well, actually I'm still doing it now. I run a website about television's single dads. And I'm gonna have to figure out how to tell the story. I write tvdads.com is my website, and I talk about the history of single dads on television. And fortunately, at the time when I was doing this back in the late 90s, many of the people that were in early television shows were we're still alive or still willing to talk about their past history. And there was a show called Bonino that was a CBS show, and it was one of the first single dad shows. Anzio Pinza, the famous opera star, was in one of the very first single dad shows. And he was – A long time ago, he ran this single dad show called Bonino, and in the show, he played, funnily enough, an opera star. And there was a group of boys that he had like eight kids in the show. They were all boys, and one of the boys in the show was a fellow named Van Dyke Parks. Van Dyke Parks would later become, he was a composer and would wind up being a composer with the Beach Boys. So anyway, to make a long story short, which is now already too late, Van Dyke Parks is one of the kids in this Bonino show that Ezio Pinza starred in, and he was part of a group called the American Boy Choir. And the American Boy Choir was based in Princeton, New Jersey. The show Bonino was shot live in New York City every Saturday. The American Boy Choir was a nationwide search for boys who could sing. It was kind of like the Vienna Boys Choir, except it was the American Boy Choir. It was based in Princeton, next to Princeton University. This is in the early 50s, now, remember. So they would, every year at Christmas, the American Boy Choir actually lived in on their own campus next to Princeton University. And it was a kind of a boarding school for them. And every Christmas, they would go around the neighborhoods in Princeton and sing Christmas carols. So Van Dyke, as I was interviewing him once, was talking about he would commute back and forth between Princeton and New York, and they'd come home. And so he would do this caroling, and they would go through the town of Princeton, and then they would go onto the campus, and there were the residences of people who had tenure there, and they would sing in front of their houses. Well, one of the people that was on campus in Princeton University in 1953 was Mr. and Mrs. Albert Einstein. And Van Dyke talked about how they would go up and they would start singing a carol, and people would come out and listen to them. So they got to the Einstein's house, and they started singing, and they started singing Silent Night. And Albert Einstein came to the door with his wife, and he was listening to them sing. And while they were they sang the first verse, or they were getting through the first verse, Dr. Einstein left. And so they were thinking, did he not want to hear this? His wife was standing there, but Albert Einstein wasn't anywhere to be seen. And so they went into the second verse of Silent Night, and all of a sudden, from inside the house, they heard a violin, and Albert Einstein came out on the steps of his house and played Silent Night with them. And he said, of all the things that happened in his life, and he'd seen a lot of things going on in his life, he said, being able to sing Silent Night with Albert Einstein backing me up was the most amazing thing I'd ever have in my life. And when he was telling me this, I'm sitting there talking with him, and he was in tears telling me about Albert Einstein backing him up on the violin. And I think it was just one of the most amazing stories I've ever heard.
Wow.
But that was, just a knockout thing to hear. So anyway, I hope that was an uplifting story, because it always floored me every time even thinking about it. It's just what an amazing thing to happen.
Yeah, seriously. Wow. What a great story. Thank you very much for sharing that, Jim. Appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
All right. So, Jim, you want to tell people where they can find Jim O'Kane?
Yeah, you can find me on a bunch of different podcasts. I'm out there on Spotify and things like that. One of my more popular ones that I did with Hal Bryan a few years ago was the Rocketeer Minute. Just like Rob's Movies by Minutes shows, we covered 1 minute of Joe Johnston's 1991 adventure film from Disney. 1 minute of screen time per episode. And on our fourth episode, we got reached out to by the Rocketeer himself, Billy Campbell, and he joined us on about 30 or 40 episodes. It was kind of mind-boggling, but he became a good friend of ours, and we had a lot of fun. We talked to Joe Johnston, the director himself, being on the show, and a bunch of people, some of whom had only one line in the movie, some people who were the visual effects guys, and people who did the stunt work and stuff. So they all showed up, and it was a really great time that we had making a podcast. So if you get a chance, check out the Rocketeer Minute, available wherever you found this podcast. You're probably going to find our podcast. So check out the Rocketeer Minute if you get a chance.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, or you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.